Hey there, lovelies. Before we get started on today's episode, we have a quick announcement. I am joined by Carly via cell phone up against my microphone. She's driving.
True. Happy hour.
Yeah, she wanted to be involved in this announcement too, but we could not quite figure out a time to do it. So, you know, driving. Just safety first, Carly. Please don't hit any cars.
We make it work. It's cool. I'm, like, not even going through miles an hour right now. Well, LA.
Maybe we should just record like this every day or every time.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So anyway, quick announcement. We have said goodbye to our friends at the Phantom Podcast Network. We love them so, but we were ready to move on to other things, and we decided to partner up with our friends, our bros at Modern Horrors, and we are doing a new podcast network called the Modern Horrors Podcast Network.
What?
Yep. So
I love it.
You can still listen to us the same way you have been, unless you were listening to us through Phantom Podcast Network, in which case you can't do it that way. But we're on iTunes still. We're on every podcatcher still. And I believe we'll be on SoundCloud again at some point.
Yes, I believe so as well.
So we're really...
And through Modern Horrors, their iTunes feed, right?
Okay, yes. Yeah, I kind of think that's how it works. We're still working out the kinks. This was really a very quick decision. It happened really fast, but we're so excited. Yeah. We love those guys. We love being a part of their little group. And, you know, more exciting announcements to come, I'm sure. But for now, just look for that change.
I'm so excited. And I'm so excited that we jankily set this whole situation up so I can be here to express my excitement.
Yeah, really shitty cell phone recording is still better than nothing at all.
Agreed.
Okay. Agreed. Okay, well, on with the episode. Hey there, my lovelies. Thank you for joining us on the 46th episode of Final Girls Horrorcast, the show where we discuss some of the horror, thriller, and sci-fi movies currently available on your favorite streaming sites. I'm Amy.
And I'm Carly.
Today's episode is all about Sean Byrne. So we'll be discussing The Loved Ones and The Devil's Candy, which are his only full-length films, believe it or not.
I believe it.
I mean, I can't. They're awesome.
Leia thinks so, too.
Leia also likes them.
She's like, yeah, Mom, God, get with it.
Just a heads up for you new listeners, we are a spoiler-heavy podcast, so listen at your own risk. The Loved Ones is available to stream on Tubi TV, and The Devil's Candy is on Netflix.
I can't. Every time you say Tubi TV, I just think of Teletubbies.
Oh, really? Because I think of Tubby Time from Creep.
I also think of that, yeah. But like a Teletubby pops, like Tinky Winky's like, hey.
But I don't even know if it's Tubby or if it's supposed to be Tubby.
I mean, either way, it's kind of a poor choice for a name.
It's a really bad name. But it's free, and you can watch a really good movie for free if you don't feel like paying for it. I totally paid for the digital version because I loved it.
And I mooched off of Amy and watched it on her login.
There you go. Secrets revealed. Okay, so before we jump into these movies, though, let's get started with a segment that we like to call...
Trailer Trash Talk.
Today's trailer is The Monster Project with a release date of August 18th, so this week. Directed by Victor Matthau and written by Corbin Billings and Shiria Lynn and Victor Matthau. I really... still can't even say relatively easy names. It's fine. The IMDb summary is, a recovering drug addict takes a job with a documentary crew who plans to interview three subjects who claim to be real-life monsters. What did you think of this trailer?
I wasn't into it. I wasn't feeling it. Didn't really like the premise. Wasn't really into the footage that we got. I just, this makes me not interested.
I mean, it reminds me a little bit of Digging Up the Morrow, which is basically the same as this. I mean,
yeah,
it's the same plot, it's, basically.
Right.
I'm not totally against it. This looks like something I would stream on a Sunday afternoon when it's raining outside and I have nothing else to do. Like,
sure. I'm not going to go out of my way to see this for sure.
No.
If we did a double of this and Digging Up the Morrow, which, hey, could happen.
Yeah, totally.
Yes, obviously, I'd watch it. But I've got a lot of other stuff that I need to take care of.
Not a first choice. Although, okay, so it's, we've got a guy who's doing, looks like he's creating fakey monster sighting videos for YouTube and notices that he's getting a lot of hits, decides to try to make a TV show based on it. So it's definitely got a found footage feel to it. A lot of like that green color, dark, what did they call that? Night vision.
I was going to say night footage, but night yes, footage. I think that's what it is.
That also, night footage also. So it's got that kind of look to it. If you don't mind looking at that for an hour and a half, then maybe it's fine. I'm not really worried about it. I think it's probably okay. I feel like it would have been more fun if they didn't show everything in the trailer. Like, we
agreed.
See every scary monster. They said there's only three of them, and we see all three of them doing scary things. So that kind of takes out the fun. It's going to be a lot of jump scares, you know. Something to put on to just get your heart rate going a little bit, and then it's over. So,
totally.
Not totally against it. I think it could look worse, and I thought that the trailer was actually pretty well done for something that looks pretty low budget. I think it still looked pretty good. But all in all, not something I'm super stoked on.
Yeah, it was more just like the premise that I just wasn't, you know.
Yeah. It is a little
wasn't attached to. It's fine.
Yeah. It's just
I'm sure it's fine.
A jump scare movie to stream is how I would think about it, you know?
Totally.
Okay. Well, let's get into it. To our Sean Burnorama.
I'm into it already.
I'm so excited. Okay, so let's talk about The Loved Ones first. It's from 2009. Written and directed by Sean Byrne. The IMDb summary is, when Brent turns down his classmate Lola's invitation to the prom, she concocts a wildly violent plan for revenge. Man. So, Carly.
This movie's fucked up.
It's so fucked up, right?
So fucked up. I was, like, uncomfortable watching some of the stuff. Like, this movie's fucked up.
It's really, it's, okay. So, here's what my basic review was on Letterboxd, was this is, like, a glitter-infested version of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because it has all these horrific, tortury things happening, but it doesn't actually show you anything. You don't actually see very much gore. You don't see a lot of blood. It's all in the sound. And
it's all implied.
Yes. It's like there's a lot of, like, you'll hear like a gooey, horrible sound happening, but you won't actually see it. You'll see like a little bit of the after effect, like a flash of the after effect, but mostly.
Or when they're drilling his head, you just see the smoke coming up from the back of his head.
Yes. Ugh. Lots of close-ups of near where it's happening, but not actually where it's happening. Or like when he's drilling into his head and you see from behind, you know, instead of seeing an actual drill going into someone's head.
Which is my favorite kind. And that's like, that's what always I loved about Texas Chainsaw Massacre is that, like, there are those things where people swear, you know, you see the hook going into the chick's back, but you don't. It's all like you see it in your brain because your brain makes it real.
And that's what I think makes this so good. That he does a really good job of that. And you don't.
Totally.
You know, usually it's very, like, especially right now, I feel like horror is very polarized. There's, like, these artistic, more, like, psychological, cerebral films, and then there's like the really gross out horror type films. This marries the two and it's really fun. The character development is this really great. I love the way Sean Byrne makes characters feel so tangible, so real. More in Devil's Candy than this movie, but still, it's got... The characters have more dimension than you typically would see in, like, a teenage horror type
and
film.
And I also... I agree. I also really like the opposite end of the spectrum that you kind of get. You get like the kid's friend who's like taking his date to the prom and they're like actually at the prom. But then you get like this alternate take of this, what he's going through, which is like, I think it's a really good balance that it's not like all centralized around the fucked up shit that's happening. There's like also other fucked up shit happening, but it's like fucked up in a different way, you know?
So we have, okay, so the basic premise, and if you haven't seen this, you really should, but I'll just give you a brief overview. So we have Brent. Brent is a teenager. He's having a hard time. He was driving and he accidentally killed his father when he got in an accident. And he's trying to live with his mom. He's having trouble showing his emotion to his girlfriend, who he obviously loves and cares about. He's just having a really hard time, obviously.
Is like the sweetest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. And he's obviously a really sweet kid. It's nice because you kind of see the car accident, so you get a feel for his relationship with his father, and they're joking around. And then you also have he has a relationship with his friend, and there's really only one scene with him and his friend, and then the rest of it is two separate lines, storylines. So we have Brent's storyline when he gets kidnapped, and then we also have Jamie's storyline, his friend, and his prom, his dance date, and their relationship. Now, Jamie's dance date, I don't know why I'm calling her his dance, his date, his date to the dance.
I like dance date.
Thank you. His dance date.
Go with it.
Was her brother went through the same thing. You later find out her brother went through the same thing that Brent's going through, which is like this horrible tortury thing that we'll get to later. But Mia, Jamie's date, is going through the after effects of losing someone this terrible, horrible way. And then we see Brent actually going through it. So it's just really great because even though they're not completely connected and they're very different storylines, it breaks up the tortury scenes to see Jamie and Mia dealing with the after effects of trauma and then Brent actually going through the trauma. So it's a great like back and forth between the two, and you slowly start to recognize the connection between the two storylines, but they're not, it's not a linear partnership between the stories. They're very they're related, but they're not the same. So it's interesting. I really liked that.
I did too, a lot. It was a good breakup because this movie's fucked up. It needs like some kind of balance.
It really does. It's not like boom, 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 one after another. It's not unrelenting. You have some breath of fresh air. You have some like almost comedic relief. Not quite comedic, but like almost comedic, I guess, is a great way to put it.
No, totally, because it's kind of like that uncomfortable laughter that you have. Like I don't know if you have this, but I get this a lot. I'm very awkward in certain situations, and sometimes like I just feel like laughing, even though it's like totally the inappropriate thing to do because nothing that's happening is really funny. But right. You're just like, I don't know what else to do right now, so I'm just gonna giggle.
Yeah,
even though I know it's inappropriate.
No, yeah, exactly. But it's. I don't know. I really, really, like, the first time I watched this movie, I was maybe 3/4 of the way through before I realized how much I was enjoying it. Because this isn't typically my cup of tea. And while I really love the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I'm not a huge torture, kidnappy film person. Totally. It's not my favorite, like, part of the genre. But when it's done this well, I absolutely love it. And when there's a good balance and when there's, you know when to take a break and you know when to bring it back full steam. I mean, there's some really powerful stuff happening here. I really, really appreciate this film. And
I agree.
This film, and I saw it, and The Devil's Candy came out the very next week. So this all just happened very recently, where I saw The Loved Ones and The Devil's Candy, both in like the same week. And then I was like, okay, we need to watch these again and do an episode on it because, wow. I wish, and everyone was talking about The Loved Ones for a really long time. You know, it's been a really, it's an Australian film, obviously.
I really like the Australian aesthetic because this is, I feel like, visually, I don't know, like there's something about like Australian horror movies. They like obviously don't like all look the same, but right. they remind me, it's very simple, like it reminds me of like Wolf Creek, I think it is.
Yeah.
Even though like they're totally not similar in any shape, way, or form. No, and
it's just there's something about it. Same thing with like mm-hmm. Deathgasm, which this film couldn't really be very much any more different than Deathgasm, but Deathgasm, you know, the metal. Metal's like a big part of both of these films. Like,
yeah.
And I like had to look it up. I'm like, is metal really that big of a thing in Australia? Because it seems like it's sprinkled in all these movies. So I guess they have a normal metal scene like America does, but it seems, I don't know. It just seems so like concentrated in horror. Prevalent.
Yeah.
The horror that I've seen from Australia recently anyway. So oh, man. But I just really loved this. So there is a doggy scene in The Loved Ones.
Missed it.
Did you?
I did.
They didn't show much. And the dog was obviously a very good actor and not actually injured, which is nice because you don't really see blood or anything. So I'll just tell you.
I missed it.
Do you want me to just tell you what happened?
Sure. I was also answering like our anniversary special questions.
Carly.
So I think that like so while I totally watched this movie. Like I really, really liked it when I needed to be, I was definitely like sucked into it. But I feel like there was, you know, I just have that little thing inside me that's like, hey, an animal might get killed right now. You should probably just tune out. And so that's kind of what happened.
Yeah. Well, they tell you what they did to the dog, but you don't see it happening, right? So he does say that he put a nail in the dog's head with a hammer, which is horrible. But you just see a dirty dog, like, kind of crawling and whimpering, walking towards the door. He's crawling. It's obviously a trained trick that this dog is very good at, like, crawling and whimpering.
Wouldn't have been able to handle it. It's fine.
Yeah, but it's not... What I mean is it's not gory. You don't see the dog actually die. And when the dog goes, because he does die, but it goes, like, peacefully. And he just falls asleep. And then that's that. So it's not... I'd say it's the least brutal part of this film. But I know you might beg to differ because of how you feel about puppies.
Which we'll talk about in the next movie.
Is there a puppy thing in the next movie?
No, I texted you about it. We'll talk about
it. Okay, we'll get there.
makes me feel like a bad person, but it's fine.
So, I mean, anything else that sticks out to you or any points that you might like to bring up before we kind of go through this a little bit more?
I really appreciated, because I read a little bit about the movie, I really appreciated that the actress who plays Lola, our serial killer, definitely like took, you know, watched Misery as one of these.
Yes.
As one of her like reference characters, which totally amazing. And I can totally see that in this.
She's phenomenal in this. She is so terrifying. I want to be. I'm going to be Lola for Halloween. I've already decided. I already picked out the dress. It's going to be a fantastic costume.
I love it.
Oh, I'm so excited. So much pink and blood. I mean, never since Carrie have I been so excited to be covered in pink and blood.
Oh man, God, you need the power drill.
Oh, and so much pink. Oh my God, the pink eyeshadow and the pink lips and the glitter pink nails and just blood.
Oh, I'm excited for
the drill. I get to have a prop, a drill. So excited about it.
It's
you guys don't steal my idea. I'll be very upset. Just kidding. You can, as long as you don't go to the same parties as me. Although no one I will ever go to a party with will understand this costume.
They'll be like, oh, are you Carrie?
Yeah, they'll probably just think I'm Carrie. Wait, Carrie wasn't a brunette, Amy. You really need to learn about horror movies. Could just hear the comments now.
Slap.
I'm Lola, bitch.
Drill into their face.
Oh, and the daddy character, so creepy. And their relationship, so creepy. Talk about
so creepy.
Incestuous.
gross.
Incestuous love, like actual love. Like she's changing and he's just like lusting after her. Ugh. And she's like, I haven't found my frog prince and because I love you. And I'm just like, oh, all the chills at once.
Down his hair to make him like even more creepy.
Oh, yeah.
That character, I just could, every time like it panned, the screen panned to him, I was like, wah, go away.
Yeah. 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 And then, okay, so were you expecting the basement portion of this film?
No. In fact, that's the only part that kind of, like, threw me off a little bit, because I was like, why are there weird mole people living down there?
It did remind me a little bit of The Descent.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought of.
A little bit.
I was like, why are those mole people down there?
They boil their brains and then throw them in a basement for multiple years. You're going to look like a mole person.
But does that make you want to eat people?
If you haven't eaten anything, Carly, if you're starving to death.
I feel like I would just like want to die if I was in that part.
Think about it this way. You're starving to death. Your brains are boiled. You have no personality anymore. It's gone. You're basically an animal at this point.
If your brains are boiled, aren't you just dead? Like, at first I totally thought they were, like, giving them a lobotomy.
Buy into it, Carly. Okay. Your brains are boiled. You're an animal.
I let that part go, but I'm just saying.
Let me finish. Your brains are boiled. You're an animal. You have animal instincts. You're in a dark hole. You don't even know where you are, but you might recognize the face of the asshole that did this to you. And if he falls in there, you would rip him to shreds too.
I'll peel his face off.
Yeah. I will. If I'm starving and I become a mole person in a basement, I will gladly eat a motherfucker that did that to me.
I don't know if I would eat him, but
girl.
I mean, I don't know. Again, my brains would be boiled. What would I do? Yeah. But I would definitely gouge his eyes out.
Yeah.
That's probably a thing.
I mean, if you're tearing off his arm because you're angry, but then you're also starving, you might take a chunk off the arm.
Dude, if I had the upper body strength to tear off a dude's arm, I'd be really impressed with my skills.
You need to start lifting weights. Lifting some bones. There's all those bones down there.
Life goals.
You could make like a dumbbell out of the bones.
I need a gif of like myself pulling arms off of, I don't know.
Pulling
not really
arms off of people.
Yeah, like rad. The badass that I am.
Oh yeah, I wasn't expecting that part, but it worked for me. It worked. He kills them pretty
quick. It's funny because I wasn't expecting it, but I also didn't second guess it when it happened.
Yeah.
I was like, sure they have a basement full of mole people.
Well,
these people are crazy.
What's worse than killing? Okay, here's how I see it. What's worse than killing these people this way? What's worse is keeping them and not killing them.
Yeah, well, they don't kill them.
Forcing them
and
to live this life, you know? Because up until that point, you think they're just dead, right? You think you're just killing these people and that's it. But they're not. They're doing something much, much worse. So maybe this is a good segue to talk about Bright Eyes, the character of Bright Eyes.
Who that poor lady.
Is the older mother figure at the table, who has a drill in her head, big hole in her head, so her brains have obviously been boiled. And she looks horrified and terrified and so sad all the time. And come to find out, she is actually Lola's mother at the end. So, which means Daddy's been doing this probably for a very long time. Daddy decided to make a mother and for Lola and made this woman have a child with him.
He's the worst kind of dude. Ugh,
truly terrible. Yeah, Bright Eyes is just so... She's just... It's tragic what happens
Super
to
sad.
Her. And you're almost happy when Lola kills her because you're like, fuck, finally this poor woman can find some sort
of
peace.
Out of her misery, please.
Yeah. And honestly, a pillow over the face is way better than what was happening to her, so... All for it. So sad. Oh, man. So this is like a really fucked up family. Again, very similar to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And then we also have a cop character who I kind of like and appreciate. He with the help of Brent's girlfriend, figures out to go to this house, and it's a very reminiscent. It's a scene very reminiscent of Misery. The cop finally figures it out. He finally comes in. He's gonna save the day, and no, he's dead.
The poor cops in these horror movies, they just never make it.
Yeah, so bummer. Bummer for the cop, especially because that's Mia's father. And fuck, Mia's already had enough heartache. She lost her brother and her father. Did she lose her brother, though?
Yeah.
Because, okay. We know that Lola had three victims. Let me find it.
But, like, at that point, they're not there anymore.
But she said one of them got away. There was four victims. Keir Willis, Duncan Fletcher, Rise Agnew, and Timmy Valentine. Timmy Valentine is Mia's brother, and he got away. And she says Timmy Valentine, he's the one that got lost or something like that.
So where did he go?
I don't know, because he's the one they almost...
Great name, by the way.
I know, right? He's the one that they almost hit on the highway. That's why they got in an accident. That's why Brent's father is dead. So my question is, what happened to Timmy Valentine?
Well, that is my question also.
I don't know if they ended up finding him or what, but... Because they didn't hit him, right? They swerved and hit a tree.
Correct.
What happened to Timmy Valentine?
To Timmy Valentine. That can be the name of this episode.
Yeah, it should be. What happened to Timmy Valentine? Can be the name of this movie. What happened to Timmy Valentine?
I like it.
You'll never find out. Also, okay, so Lola likes to draw on her victims and make a heart with her initials on it. That's what she does on their chest.
Crazy bitch.
But she doesn't do it with a knife or a razor. She does it with a fucking fork.
A dingle hopper, if you will.
A dingle hopper, if you were into Little Mermaid. Which is very similar Thank to you. This movie. I'm glad you brought it up, Carly.
You're welcome.
Let's, let's make
People
some comparisons.
People most often miss that little fact.
It's true. She uses a dingle hopper to draw on his chest. Oh my god, and you don't see
She's
it.
She's a crazy bitch.
You don't see it. You just see it, and you see the after effect, and then you see her holding a fork. And that's way worse than seeing her actually do it with a fork, right? Like,
I agree, 100%.
Holy shit. Because forks aren't that sharp. Have you tried to, like, cut yourself with a fork? It's not the easiest thing in the world.
No.
There's a lot of force that goes behind it, and I would think she just keeps going over it and over it. Yikes. Ouch, 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 yikes.
I hate that.
Oh.
He's used to it, though. He's...
It's true. He's into cutting himself.
He likes...
Do you think that's why
with,
he
like,
made
with
it?
With sharper things.
Yeah. Like razor blades.
I definitely feel like that is a factor as to why he maybe wouldn't cry as much as, like, a normal person. Because she was, like, yelling at him to cry. He's, yeah. like, absorbing the pain maybe a little bit differently than...
That's a good point.
...other victims.
That's a good point. I really just saw it as he was, fuck you, I'm not going to do what you want me to. But it makes sense that it'd be easier for him to to avoid crying when he hurts himself on a regular basis.
Because, like, I definitely cry when I don't want to. Like, I feel like right. in that situation, like, you know, you don't really have that choice unless inflicting pain upon yourself maybe is more regular, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, well, go ahead. Tell me what the most brutal part of this movie was for you.
I think the forehead drilling scene, because of just how long it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't like...
There's a lot of breaks.
Yeah. And there's... And then they go back and he, you know, she says, make the hole bigger. The hole's not big enough.
You see how sloppy and not perfect they are at this because she's learning how to do this part of it.
Yeah. It felt so long and so, you know... kind of real, like that it was just really off-putting because there was obviously the tension that built before because she kind of hesitates a little bit and then he's like, you just have to do it and you have to do it hard, and then like it was just such a long scene that it was like super brutal
yeah
for me.
Agreed, that one was brutal For me, I think it was the knives and the feet, because that scene was pretty long too.
Totally.
And
here's the one that drives it home, or whatever he says.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was getting him back for ruining his car, his Kingswood. This one's for the Kingswood, he says. That's the type of car he was driving. I had to look it up because I was like, I bet that's the car. I want to check. Yeah, it's some Australian car I never heard of. Because even Tony was in the room. I'm like, Kingswood, is that a car? And Tony knows all about cars. But he's like, I don't know, maybe. I was like, that's weird. You don't know about it. It must be foreign. So anyway, really just, I don't even know what else to say. It's just really good. That stuff.
You definitely have to see it.
That stuff they inject in the necks. Here's my question. The stuff they inject in the necks to keep them from yelling, that's permanent, right? And what was that?
I don't know. I didn't really get that either. Like when that happened, I was literally like, what did they just do?
Yeah, they injected something, and I imagined it to be, like, silicone or something, which it probably wasn't, but that's just, like...
He, like, gurgled a little bit.
Yeah, but it's, it must be permanent, because the mole people in the basement also couldn't scream, and also were silent, so...
But doesn't he yell at some point?
No.
When he gets back from the tree? For some reason, I thought I remembered him yelling. No. That could be totally delusional.
It's like, that's what the yelling sounds like. It's not actual yelling.
Poor guy. He's already been through so much.
Just doesn't have a voice anymore, and his feet probably will never work. But it has a relatively happy ending, right?
Yeah. They just run right over.
Relatively her. Happy ending. Bye-bye, Lola. The end.
I love that shot.
Really?
Of her just, like, staring
really great
down
shot
the street.
Of her just, like, unrelenting, crawling towards the car, like... I'm still going to get you. She's crawling on concrete with a knife and they're in a car. There's no way you're going to survive this. But yet, she still tries.
She gives no fucks.
It's really great to see.
She's coming for you.
It's really fun to see a female villain that's just a girl, right? She's not a superhero. She's not a monster. She's not anything other than what you would see.
She's a little bit of a monster.
Well, okay, but she's not...
And not in a literal sense.
She's
I get
not,
what you're saying.
Yeah, she's not a superhero. She doesn't have superpowers. She's just a girl who is heartbroken and has learned from her father that this is how you solve your problems. And she just is. She... And to me, that's terrifying. I mean, she's scary as fuck. And it's kind of nice to see... A role reversal like this. Brent is our final girl. Brent's our final guy, you know?
Love it.
He is. He's the one that perseveres. He's the one that beats her. And she's the killer. So it's...
I like our standoff, too, between Holly and Lola.
Yeah.
Is that her name?
Yes. There's a great...
She kicks her square in the face.
There's that it's scene excellent. Is so great when Lola just appears next to the car and... It's a good fight. Lola's all beat down, so Holly stands a chance. And really is way stronger than her at that point, which is good. Because
thank goodness.
Yikes.
This would not have been a happy ending.
No, not at all. So, all in all, I really just, yes. Just all around yes. Really, really
agree.
Enjoyed this movie. I'm glad you
thumbs
liked
up.
It. Two thumbs up. Four thumbs up from us. Okay. Well, you ready to move on then?
Let's do it.
Okay, well then let's now talk about The Devil's Candy from 2017. Quick reminder, guys, this is on Netflix. It's really easy to watch for most of us.
Please watch it. I put it off for some reason. I'm so happy that we did this podcast so I could like make myself watch it. Because it's so good.
I don't want you to keep listening if you haven't watched it. Because there's nothing like watching it and not really knowing what to expect. In my
agreed.
Opinion.
Jason, looking at you, because I know you haven't seen it. If you're listening to this, stop it.
Awesome. Okay, so the IMDb summary is, a struggling painter is possessed by satanic forces. After he and his young family move into their dream home in rural Texas in this creepy haunted house tale. Not what I would call a haunted house tale, but whatever. It's directed and written by Sean Byrne. Again, love me some Sean Byrne. Sean Byrne he's fantastic. Is my new favorite.
Give me more, Sean.
I just want more. And this is, what, 7 years after his first movie? Well worth a wait, by the way. So here's an example of someone who takes their time and doesn't want to put out a movie unless he can get 100% behind it. And I have nothing but respect for that. I will wait another 7 years for another movie like this, if that's what it takes.
So good.
So, so good. Okay, so we have Ethan Embry.
Woo!
Oh my goodness, we have Ethan Embry. And woo! My. How he's grown.
Jeez Louise, guys.
Yikes. I mean,
I know we've talked, like, I talked about this on social media very prevalently when I watched this a couple days ago. Huge fan of Ethan Embry all throughout high school. He was the little nerdy stoner kid in Empire Records who I, like, know who Gwar is because of Ethan Embry, basically, or, like, at that point in my life. I had such a big crush on him. And then he was
Preston
and Can't Hardly Wait. Yes. And I just like was like, Jennifer Love Hewitt, what, you're an idiot. Just be in love with Preston because he's amazing.
He's kind of tall. He has hair and he wears T-shirts sometimes.
Sometimes. Oh, OK.
That's from Can't Hardly Wait. Sorry.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, I watched that movie like a month ago and it was fantastic. So good. And then all of a sudden I'm watching this movie. And he's like, I'm getting ready to spray paint. And I was like, what the fuck happened to Ethan Embry? I don't know where I've been, but he's been around.
Well, he was in The Guest.
Working out.
So Ethan Embry was in The Guest.
That's true. But he wasn't.
He wasn't like this in The Guest.
No, he was just like, you know.
Normal guy.
Around in The Guest.
And I like Frankie and Grace. And he's on Frankie and Grace, which he still looks fantastic in, but he does not look like this.
He was on Grey's Anatomy, too, and I was just like, oh, yeah, that's Ethan Embry.
Yeah.
He was like, still you know.
He's a good-looking guy when he looks normal, but this version of Ethan Embry is like.
I'm like, I'm into metal Ethan Embry.
I want to be his fidget spinner, just saying.
Like. Never heard that before, but I'm on board.
I just made it up.
I like it.
Thank you.
But yeah, like. Yes.
Okay, maybe we should talk about the movie now. But
oh yeah,
BT Dubs, so cut, looking amazing, long hair, tons of tattoos, super artsy and metal-y, and I'm all in.
It's so funny because prior, I tried to watch like start this movie a couple times, but I was like, it was late at night, and I really wanted to actually watch this movie. And so for a while, my only note on this movie was, "Oh my God, it's the guy from that John Cusack Hotel movie," which I later was like, "Okay, that movie's Identity."
Yeah. So Ray is laying in bed. This is the beginning. Ray is laying in bed. He hears whispering. You just hear demonic whispering, and he wakes up. Grabs his Flying V red Gibson guitar, looks at the cross on the wall, and just starts strumming the guitar. Just one chord. He only knows one chord and just goes for it. And his mother comes in and says, okay, you need to go back to the hospital. Wait. Ray says something like, I need to play loud so I can't hear him. And the mother said he's going back to the hospital. Once your father gets home, she goes to go down the stairs. He hits her in the head with the Flying V guitar. And then dad comes home, sees her laying there, and hears the guitar in the background. Then we see Ethan Embry with his family coming to see this house. And
no, because we have to talk about the part where, like, Ethan Embry's adorable.
Well, we'll go through it, but I'm just giving the basic plot. Do you want to talk about the part where he's adorable, Carly? You're giving me the cute pouty face. It is then the best scene of the movie. I absolutely love that part. My favorite.
That's when I was like, I'm into it. I don't even know what the rest of this movie is about. But that was so fucking cute that I'm just in it.
Sean Byrne has a great way about writing humanity in his characters.
Yeah. They're just like, so we really get to know
who
these people are. Because we see Ethan Embry and he's painting this like butterfly painting. And we see his adorable daughter, you know, kind of give him shit. For the bank painting with the butterflies. And then Sherry Appleby comes in, who I really like her. She's crazy. and she's the wife, and they're like, you know, we have to get going. And so they all get into the car together, and it's this really adorable scene where they're like listening to metal. And the look that Ethan Embry gives his daughter before like the, you know, part cuts in is just like made my heart melt. All three times
they
that I started
both
this
are
movie.
Like mouthing the words to this metal song, and mom is just like, I can't with this, and they're just so it. Into it. And mom's like, can we listen to something like a little less hard? And the daughter goes, like Metallica, you know. And they
and Ethan Embry just gives this like little giggle that just made my heart so happy.
Yes.
Okay, and now we can go on to the rest of it.
So they're driving, and they decide they're going to go view this house that's for sale, which is the house that Ray killed his parents in. And the guy showing them the house tells them, you know, there were two deaths in the house. But it was an old couple. The woman fell down the stairs, and then the husband killed himself because he couldn't live without her, which is not true. But I don't know that he knows that that's not true. I think he's just putting a positive spin on knowing that a couple died. Maybe he doesn't know the details of the death. Because Ray is not being treated like a killer. Ray is not in a mental hospital. Ray is in a motel. So this must have happened fairly recently, is what I'm thinking. And maybe Ray just fled after the fact, and they didn't even know Ray was living there. That's also a possibility.
That's what I thought, kind of, too.
Yeah. So either way, Ray's no longer living there. The family, the parents are dead. And now Ethan Embry and his family decide that they're going to buy this home. Now, basically, the rest of the film is Ray coming back to the house, wanting to move back in because it's his home. And that's where his parents lived. And he and Ethan Embry's daughter, Zoe, have a discussion. Now, when Ray comes to the door... And Zoe answers it. She is so...
At night.
She is so friendly to him. And he is a very large man, and there's obviously not all
in,
there.
In, like, a red Adidas tracksuit.
Yes.
He's got crazy eyes, because he's the guy from Identity.
He has such crazy eyes. He plays crazy so well.
So well.
Really, like, way too well.
Like, accurate.
I'm terrified.
I am too, and I'm like, he's got those shifty eyes, and I can't take the shifty eyes.
Can't trust them.
They freak me out.
Can't trust the shifty eyes.
I just feel like he's got so much going on in his brain that he like can't focus on one thing.
Well, and he says, so he plays the guitar very loudly, and he does it throughout the whole film, and you find out he's doing it to tune out Satan's voice telling him to do these terrible things. So there is a level, and at first you're like, is there really a devil telling him what to do, or is he just like cracked?
Schizophrenic.
He's not cracked. He is literally hearing the devil, and you find this out because Ethan Embry starts to hear the devil, right? Ethan Embry
starts losing time,
starts making these magnificent paintings that are so creepy and terrifying, and I want them all over my house.
Right? I was thinking that same thing. I was like, I don't even have any or need any crosses in my house. I want that fucking painting.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So good. But, you know, he's making these terrifying paintings that have his daughter in them and they're flames and terrible things. And it sort of becomes a thing where you can tell he has the ability to sell his soul to become this famous painter he's always wanted to become with his own original artwork, where he wouldn't have to do stupid freelance paintings for the bank. He could do his own gothic, metal, scary, creepy art.
But he chooses his daughter like a boss.
Yeah. So he comes to realize that this is what's happening to him, but it takes him a while to get there. And I'm surprised he gets there at all, really, because there's no real indication that that's what's happening.
Yeah. It's just like you can really tell how much he really, really loves his family.
Yeah. I think he realizes it when he paints that and his daughter's being harmed in the painting. And he says, it's not done yet. I can't ruin it because it's not done yet. Because her face is in color. All the other children's faces are kind of white, you know? So it's like her future hasn't been realized yet, you know?
Right.
So maybe it's, I don't know.
And this is the part that I felt that I texted Amy about. Because there's like when we first realized that he's drawing kids that are actually being kind of abducted and murdered. We see, and I remembered that Amy warned me that there was a dog thing in one of these movies, and I watched The Devil's Candy first. And so we come upon this like, so we come upon this field, and there's like two brothers, one of them's on a swing and one of them's playing fetch with a dog, and you see tracksuit guy in the woods. And the kid that's playing fetch throws the ball, and the ball bounces in the woods, and the dog runs off into the woods. And so here I am, like, scrunched up in a ball, like, with my hands on my ears, like, trying to, like, brace myself for the dog murder that I'm about to watch. And then the kid's like, I'm going to go find whatever the dog's name is. And he goes, and I'm just like, oh, God, this is going to happen. And then tracksuit guy comes up behind the kid with a rock, and immediately I'm like, oh, okay, we're good.
Oh, okay, it's just the kid getting murdered.
It's just totally the kid fine. That's gonna die.
Don't worry, Carly, not a dog, just a child being murdered. It's fine.
I texted Amy and I was like, what does this say about me? And I was like, getting ready for like a literal anxiety panic attack. And then I was like, oh, it's the kid. It's
which is funny because most people have a hard time watching child murder more than animal murder. But again, as in the Sean Byrne fashion of The Loved Ones, you don't actually see anything.
I think you don't see anything.
I think this one's a little less brutal. It's more psychological in that we're dealing with this serial killer who doesn't really seem like he wants to be a serial killer and is truly
it's all implied, and we do realize like that this knock on the head isn't what kills them.
Right. So there's this, and my favorite scene of the movie is what's coming up next, which is when, so Ray killed the child, wrapped him in a blanket, brings him back to the motel room, and he's cleaning up the blood in the bathtub from the murder. So you just see a mop and blood in the bathtub, and it's going back and forth between that and Ethan Embry mixing paint and painting. And there's lots of reds and different color and blues being mixed in the painting. So then it just goes back and forth. And the juxtaposition between the two is like
amazing.
Really amazing and really effective because you're like, wait, is that paint or blood? Paint, blood, paint, blood. And it just keeps going back and forth. And your brain is just like vibrating.
He does a
with
great
excitement.
Job of these back and forths. He connects them in such a way that like these are two different things that are going on, but they're connected, and it's brilliant. Like I've never seen like another guy or another like director who's been able to like do that kind of stuff.
I legit threw up devil horns like 3 times watching this movie. I never throw up devil horns. Not something I ever do. I was so into it. Especially the first time I watched it, that like amazing. I was like, yes, yes, literal devil horns. I was
right
so
now.
Into it. So into it. So good.
I'm so into it because you're so into it.
Fuck. I just love it so much. And then the ending of this film, let's just kind of fast forward to the ending since we're kind of running short on time. So, long story short, I mean, Pruitt makes more and more appearances in the home until finally he just breaks in. There's cops there, kills the cops. Doesn't matter.
Well, he breaks in before that.
Yes, he does, but we skipped that part.
He breaks in. I think it's important.
It is, but
he breaks in, and it almost seems like he's trying to talk to Sherry Appleby's, the wife. Because he's like, don't scream. Like, I don't want this to happen to you. Like, I don't want them to make me do this to you. I just want to talk to you. And obviously, she's like, this fucking crazy dude is in my bedroom. And then she screams.
Why did you think he was trying to talk to the wife?
Because he was in her bed.
He was in the daughter's bed.
Oh, I thought it was Sherry Appleby's bed because he comes in and then the daughter comes in afterwards.
No.
What the hell? I really thought it was.
You're remembering it incorrectly. So the daughter, he has a connection with the daughter because the daughter has a flying V tattoo, which, by the way, she's 15 and she has a flying V tattoo. Okay, your parents are cool. So he's in bed. She's sleeping. He crawls in bed with her while she's still sleeping. He's talking to her. She wakes up, starts freaking out. He covers her mouth. He says, don't scream. She says, okay, nods her head, takes his hand off. Then she screams. Then the mother comes in, beats the crap out of him.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I definitely got all that, but I was like, I don't know why I thought it was Sherry Appleby. Maybe
I don't either. You just really like Sherry Appleby, who's phenomenal in this, by the way. All the She's acting great. In this is really, really on point. Like, really good.
She's in this show that's like a really dark take of like what happens behind the scenes on like a Bachelor type show, and it's fucked up. Oh,
yeah, I heard about that show.
And it's so good. Oh. I've only seen the first season, but it's like super fucked.
So yeah, he does break in a couple times. There's run-ins. The daughter is obviously a target, and he's very connected to her. He doesn't seem like he wants to hurt her, but the devil's telling him he has to. So he kills the little boy to try to get the devil off his back so he doesn't have to kill this little girl. He explains this to her. He's like, I don't want to hurt you. You're special. But you have to be quiet or he's going to make me do it. You know, there's a lot of like that type of thing. But eventually, you know, time goes by. Parts of the movie go by. Ray at the end comes back in.
She gets abducted. Poor Ethan Embry, who's late, who promises he's never going to be late.
Yes. He's late a couple times picking her up because he keeps losing time painting his paintings. She is
and then she gets abducted.
Having trouble trusting him. He promises, I won't be late, I won't be late. His car breaks down when he's already running a little late, and he's very late, and she gets abducted. She gets herself out of it. She's amazing.
It's like one of my favorite scenes.
So awesome to watch that
scene. When she takes the tape and she's like, I'm a genius.
She really is.
Shimmy, shimmy.
She has all this she's duct taped around. She figures out how to unduct tape herself and crawls out the window just in time of getting released. But Ray comes back, finds her in the house, shoots mom and dad, and brings daughter upstairs and proceeds to start to burn the house down. Dad gets mom out. Dad goes upstairs, ends up hitting Ray in the head with the flying V guitar and rescuing Zoe at the last minute.
This like whole last scene was amazing.
And, really great.
Like, blew my mind a little bit. Like I was watching it and like the gunshot, like everything just seemed so real.
Yeah.
Like, he gets shot and immediately just, like, falls. And then, like, the mom crawling out after her daughter who's, like, you know, whatever. And then, like, it was just the perfect amount of suspense, like, when he's got the gun pointed to the mom's head and, like, they're out. Like, he's out of bullets or whatever. Like, there's just – I don't know. This whole ending sequence was perfect.
Sean Byrne has a talent for endings. Which is hard. I think that's a lot.
Agreed.
A lot of the time, that's the hardest part.
That's my complaint.
Yeah, that's usually my complaint with horror movies. This guy's got it down. He's figured it out. He's figured out how to end horror movies properly. Because
it's not what you think it's going to be. It's like, it definitely is one of those movies where it starts out and you kind of think that it's going to be a demonic possession movie where the dad's going to get possessed and whatever, like, not original, but like it definitely takes its own route in such a brilliant way.
Yeah, you know what's funny is it almost feels like a serial killer movie with like a demonic undertone, because it does have almost like a Seven, or like, not because there's a cop influence, but you're kind of following the mind of a serial killer, and then, you know, there's this happy family aspect on the side. It's really like, it's just an interesting way to tell a story like this. We don't see this every day. Usually it's like one or the other. It's hard to marry a demonic movie with a serial killer movie. It's not something you see. Usually if someone's possessed, they're like, you know, tied to a bed and the bed's levitating, you know, a la Exorcist.
Yeah.
This is something different and special and really just fucking awesome. Like, really well done. Like, applaud to Sean Byrne. I love it. I also really, just a quick tie-in that I noticed is in The Loved Ones, Brent is wearing a Master of Puppets t-shirt, and in this movie Ethan Embry's wearing a Master of Puppets t-shirt, and I was just like, ah, so much Master of Puppets.
Totally noticed that too.
Totally into the Master of Puppets thing. Going for it. Okay. Anything else? I mean, I could talk about this forever, honestly. Like, there's so much good stuff here. The painting's really cool. There's, like, this shot that they keep showing when Ethan Embry's having his weird dreams and stuff of Zoe on fire. And it's the cover of this film when you see it on Netflix. It's, like, it almost looks like a painting, but not. It's, like, Zoe's face and it's all red and kind of wavy. It's just so memorable and, like, sticks in your head and it's beautiful but terrifying and really great. I really love that. The music's really good in both of these movies. The sound is really good. Just
everything.
Obviously, a lot of heart and soul went into these stories. They're not something someone just thought up and decided to do. Like, he fucking cared. He cared about every aspect of it, and it shows. And just, I can't say enough good things about Sean Byrne, and I'm just so excited to see more from him.
I agree 100%.
I'm just really glad we did this episode. I was like, and I just saw these movies, and I've seen them twice now. So I'm just like,
I remember seeing that Devil's Candy was on Netflix, and I was like, we gotta do it!
Yeah.
And next episode!
And shout out to Modern Horrors, who is on the cover of Devil's Candy.
Heck yeah, their Blu-ray, their review, 10 out of 10.
Yep, their review showing Woo-hoo. 10 out of 10 Modern Horrors. So we love those boys, those peoples over at Modern Horrors. They're just so great. We love them. All right.
We do. Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom. Okay. So we have, let's move on then to our newest segment, which we like to call
Social Media Question of the Week.
This week's question is, you know a death occurred in your home and the previous owner is knocking. Do you let them in?
All right. So let's get into our responses.
There we go.
Twitter, we have at KillByKillPod. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you over that torso.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention.
High five.
We posted a pic along with my social media question. I also posted a picture of Ethan Embry all cut up and spray painting people. And
spray painting and being a badass.
Amazing.
High five.
A Kill by Kill was distracted. Yeah, Kill by Kill podcast was distracted by the torso.
I also am, so yeah. High five.
Me too. Scroll down, Carly. Scroll down so you can
I can't
going.
Look away. I'm sorry. I'm just gonna leave that up there.
Come on, scroll down.
It's fine. At Dark Humor Girl says, like you ladies, if someone knocks on my door, I hide until they go away.
Yes.
So I'm a firm no on that.
Oh, I love that. Smart girl. Smart girl.
Very smart. High five to you. Yeah. At the Horror Biz 666 says, absolutely not. And let's be honest, that pick is everything.
See,
high five to you
love
as well.
All the men admitting that there is some sexiness happening here.
I mean, there's so much sexiness happening
there's
here. And
so
it's Ethan Embry, which is like,
fuck, yes,
it's that it brings it to that other
it
level.
It really does. At Baseball Joe says, only if there's a flying V guitar involved. Fair.
Okay.
At Donnelly says, I secretly call the police while I search around for a butcher knife and hide next to the door frame in case he can break it down. All right. That's
cool.
A little excessive, but I appreciate it. At Your Witch Nina says, I'd definitely think about it if the former owner looks like that. Atta girl.
Gotcha. Again, high five.
Yeah, atta girl.
At the Giant Be With You says, hell no, I just treat them like those kids selling cookie dough or whatever and hide until they leave. My anxiety is way too high.
Word. At Kung Fu Dracula says, have Lurch answer it. He knows how to handle these kinds of situations. Nice.
I like that. At Cake of Doom says, they can knock all they like. They're not getting the bodies back. Finders keepers.
I laughed out loud so hard the first time I read that.
I giggled as well.
So good. You win, Cake of Doom. You win.
Totally. That's
so funny. At Last Cthulhu says, obviously, I'm nothing if not the most courteous host. We might have a lot in common. If not, I'll show him the cellar one last time.
Oh, dang.
So creepy. Cthulhu. Watch out for the Cthulhu.
All right. At MJ Hogan 29 says, if it's daylight and living in a neighborhood, I would come out on the porch to talk. If I lived in a house in the country or woods, absolutely not. I like that they expanded their thoughts.
Yeah.
On where, when and where.
Yeah.
Important. Two important factors.
Truth. On Instagram, we have Exploding Head Horror Podcast says, depends on the person at the door knocking. I'd give them a minute to speak with me and then decide how to follow suit. Of course, time of day matters. After dark, forget about it. Daytime, they stand a chance.
There we go.
Okay.
Riley QL says, it's L, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
QL. Okay, cool. Yeah, dude, I need to know exactly what happened so I can decide to leave or stay.
All right.
Okay. Okay.
Amazing Megan Joy says, no way. The strangers taught me to never answer the door. That's how you end up murdered.
Totes.
Totes.
Totes. Astrojack says, I'd have to. I couldn't not know, and I've seen too many horror movies to know that ignorance invariably ends in bad things happening.
Not a bad point, but there's no way in fucking hell I'm doing that. Our girl Elizabeth says, I only answer my door for my husband and small rodents.
That's fair.
Which I immediately thought of Cinderella for some reason, like Gus is at the door.
Oh, Gus, Gus.
Not at all what she meant, but that's what I thought of.
Black Cat Horror Meme says, sure, I'm the protagonist of this movie. I may get effed up, but ultimately I shall survive. Come on in.
Wow. Black Cat getting bold. Fucking brave.
Bold.
Bold. On Facebook, we get Tommy B, who says, fuck no, I call the cops and bolt the door. I'm sorry his mother's sister, pet Doberman, whatever, passed away, but fuck him.
I get you.
I got you, Tommy.
Sam S. says, nah. And I definitely hope everyone in the house knows to not open the door for random dudes and just stand there talking.
Right? Right?
Same.
Fuck. That's what I was saying, like, the whole movie. I'm like, don't. Why are you talking to him? Close the door, Zoe. And
they guilt trip poor Ethan Embry.
Totally
they're like,
do. He does not deserve it.
His family just lived here.
He's doing it 100% the right thing.
He's protecting his family.
Fuck yes.
With those abs.
Fuck. Yeah. Why are we talking about abs again? I can't. George N. says, sure, no need to act all suspicious. Not like he killed someone you know. All right.
There you go. John M. says, sure, why not? Hopefully the last murderer got it all out of their system. If not, I have a big stick handy at all times.
What kind of big stick is one? Mm-hmm.
But is that enough?
Okay. All right.
So obviously, I am an absolutely not. I am a bolt the door three times kind of person and hide until they go away.
If I... Human. I usually, like, try to peek and see who's at my door. Like, I do it so they can't see me. I have a special spot that I can go so they can't see me. And if I saw that guy, there's no way in hell I'm answering that door. In fact, I'm going to quietly leave my house and go somewhere else. Because there's no way in hell I'm going to even be in my house when that guy's there. So freaked out by
it. I'm just going to hope that, like, my dog's barking scares them away.
Fuck. You better get some bigger dogs, girl.
They don't know how big they are.
When I... Does
I'm
not
just saying,
sound scary.
No, I got... Bane has a deep bark.
Does he?
He is the puppy, but he sounds bigger than he is.
I'm like, you know what? Tony wants, like, a golden when we get a dog. And I'm like, no, I want a fucking, like, big-ass pit bull. Something fucking scary. So that I can go for walks by myself at night and don't have to give a fuck.
I babysat my friend's dog, Willis, and he's a pit bull. Yeah. And it was like that. And it was so cute.
Love me some pit bulls.
He was the best. Yeah. I love him. I miss
fun.
Him.
All right. Well, we're going to skip our What's Going On With Us segment because we're about to have our anniversary episode where we are just going to be talking a lot. We are going to record it right now. So let's skip that part. And since we have a long episode, we will just close out. Is that fair, Carly?
Fine.
Why did you have something pressing you needed to mention?
I have zero pressing things to mention.
Well, then thanks to Troy from Kate Bastard for a song sequencing the drone and Jason Link for our amazing logo. Normally, I would tell you to visit finalgirlshorrorcast.com, but I forgot to pay our bill, so we don't have a website right now. We do have stickers to give away, so if you're interested in getting some stickers, all you have to do is share our podcast on social media or rate and review us on iTunes, then DM us or send us an email to finalgirlshorrorcast@gmail.com and we'll send some out to you. I've been sending a lot of stickers out lately, guys, so I'm really stoked to do it, and I still have some more left, so please, please, please feel free
to
do
that.
It's the best. Yes. I've been sending out a lot, Carly. It's been great.
I've been seeing the messages. Yeah. And it makes me super happy.
You guys are making us so happy. So thank you. Thank you for listening. Yay. And thank you for appreciating us. And thank you for wanting stickers because that just makes us happy.
Yeah. We are available on downrightcreepy.com, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Tuned In, and pretty much anywhere else that you can stream a podcast. We are also very active on social media, so please interact with us. You can find us on Twitter at FinalGirlsHC and Instagram and Facebook. Just search for Final Girls Horrorcast.
Well, that's it, you guys. Next week, we're doing our special anniversary episode.
Woo woo!
Happy anniversary! Happy anniversary!
Happy anniversary!
Happy anniversary! Happy anniversary to us!
To us!
It's going to be a really fun episode. We're going to answer your questions and topics that you sent in for the past few weeks. You've been doing that, and we also have a special little mini award ceremony that we're going to do. So I'm going to be on vacation, so we're recording it now, but we promise it will be on time, and just so excited about it. And that's it for this week. So until then, I'm Amy.
And I'm Carly.
Bye. Bye.